Hello, fitness enthusiasts. This is Eddie Lester here with Fitness Mentors, and we're here to present to you Chapter 7 PowerPoint from the National Academy of Sports Medicine's Essentials of Personal Fitness Training. So let's go ahead and get started by looking at slide 1 of Chapter 7. So this chapter, we're going to be getting into flexibility training concepts. And specifically with flexibility, it's going to be really important to understand that this needs to be a huge part of a new client's training, specifically because most new clients are going to have very, very limited flexibility. And using assessments, we can sort of determine their amount of flexibility and apply these flexibility training techniques to lengthen their muscles and potentially get them moving better. So, moving over to slide 2, we have the objectives for this presentation, and the participant will be able to explain the effects of muscle imbalances on the human movement system, provide a scientific rationale for the use of integrated flexibility training, differentiate between the various types of flexibility techniques, perform and instruct appropriate flexibility techniques for given situations, understand the importance of flexibility when correcting postural imbalances, and moving over to slide 3, we have what is flexibility. So, NASM defines flexibility as the ability to move a joint through its complete range of motion. And whenever on the NASM test, whenever you see these words range of motion, you know that they're going to be talking about flexibility. And range of motion can be abbreviated as ROM. And specifically to read that second sentence on the first bullet point, range of motion of a joint is dictated by the normal extensibility of all soft tissues surrounding the joint. So extensibility is also going to be very partnered with flexibility as well. So to read the second bullet point, neuromuscular efficiency is to recruit the correct muscles to produce force, reduce force, and dynamically stabilize the body in all three planes of motion. So also with flexibility, we're concerned with neuromuscular efficiency, which is the ability of the body to send the correct motor input to be efficient at movement. And if we aren't flexible, we aren't going to be very efficient at specific movements because our posture is incorrect. So moving over to slide 4, we're going to look at postural distortions. So the main reason we want to learn about flexibility is going to be because of these postural distortions. And specifically to read the first bullet point, postural distortion patterns is a misalignment of one or more segments of the human movement system. So when we talked about this upper cross syndrome or the lower cross syndrome or pronation distortion syndrome, that's going to be an example of a postural distortion pattern. Or even just tight calves leading to excessive forward lean in an overhead squat. That can also be a postural distortion pattern. So, and it's going to be very important to understand the different postural distortion patterns to know what muscles you need to foam roll and stretch, at least associated with flexibility, and then what also to strengthen in order to have the person become a more efficient mover. So to read the second bullet point, which is going to be important and potentially on the test, relative flexibility is the key term, and it is a process that the human movement system seeks the path of least resistance. And that's going to be really important to know, that the human movement system seeking the path of least resistance is going to be called relative flexibility. All right, so moving over to slide 5, flexibility training. So flexibility training isn't just like, hey, let's go get a quick 5-minute stretch before we work out. It's really kind of like a full multifaceted approach in the sense that you're going to focus on flexibility potentially from anywhere from 10 to 30 minutes of your workout time with a client, depending on how serious their flexibility needs are. And to further that bullet point, integrating various flexibility techniques to achieve optimum soft tissue extensibility in all planes of motion is the main point of flexibility training. And to better understand flexibility training, we first need to review the human movement system, muscle imbalances, and neuromuscular efficiency. So let's click over to slide 6. So the human movement system, once again, is going to be made up of the nervous system, the muscular system, and the skeletal system. And all three of these work together to produce human movement. So specifically to read the bullet point on slide 6, the human movement system is composed of skeletal, nervous, and muscular systems. If one segment of the kinetic chain is misaligned and not functioning properly, predictable patterns of dysfunction develop. Okay, so basically what it's saying is that if you have any, we'll say, portion of the kinetic chain that is out of alignment, it's going to cause the rest of the kinetic chain to be affected. All right, so moving over to slide 7, limited flexibility. This is what's causing a lack, or called a lack of flexibility. And it says poor flexibility leads to the development of relative flexibility, which we just talked about relative flexibility on the previous slide or two. in the sense that it is the human movement system seeking the path of least resistance. Important to note. So, once again, the phenomenon of the human movement system, or human system movement, it appears, is seeking the path of least resistance during functional movement patterns. So, once again, seeking the path of least resistance. And this leads to muscle imbalances. So, clicking over to slide 8, to further understand what a muscle imbalance is, it is going to be, basically, you're going to have one muscle that's tight, and it's going to be pulling that joint in a slightly awkward position. For instance, if the pec major is tight, or your chest muscle is tight, that pulls the shoulder slightly forward, and you get sort of this rounded shouldered appearance. And what happens is that since it's pulling that shoulder forward, the muscle that actually would typically hold the shoulders back is going to be lengthened. And that's kind of what this picture is at the bottom of the muscle imbalance slide, or slide 8. So muscle imbalances results in altered reciprocal inhibition, synergistic dominance, arthrokinetic dysfunction, and decreased neuromuscular control. Which, once again, we talked about altered reciprocal inhibition and we talked about synergistic dominance before, and those are important to know for the test as well. Just as a reminder, altered reciprocal inhibition is going to be where one muscle is overactive, causing inhibition to its functional antagonist. Or if one side of the muscle is tight, for instance, if you look at the picture below, the left side or the left muscle is going to be tight, that lengthens its antagonist, or inhibits or weakens its antagonist, which is the muscle on the right. Synergistic dominance is when you have this sort of shortened relationship, a synergist takes over for a prime mover. All right, moving over to slide 9. There it is, just to go over it a little bit further if we haven't already. Altered reciprocal inhibition is caused by a tight agonist, which inhibits its functional antagonist. For instance, and this is going to be an example from the test, an overactive psoas, which is going to be your hip flexor, decreasing the neural drive to the gluteus maximus is an example of what? And it's going to be an example of altered reciprocal inhibition. So if you look at your hip and you flex your hip, the muscle that flexes your hip is going to be called the psoas. The opposite of hip flexion is going to be hip extension. The muscle that predominantly does that is going to be the gluteus maximus. So when the psoas gets tight, it's going to inhibit the gluteus maximus. That's what altered reciprocal inhibition is. And then you have synergistic dominance, which is going to occur when the synergist takes over the function for a weak or inhibited prime mover. And this is something like when the hamstrings take over for hip extension due to the fact that the gluteus maximus is inhibited or weak due to the tightness of the psoas in altered reciprocal inhibition. So then we also have arthrokinetic dysfunction, which is basically just going to be altered motion at a joint, and then neuromuscular efficiency, which we talked about earlier, which is the ability of the nervous system to properly coordinate muscular action or have efficient movement. So moving over to slide 10, we have mechanoreceptors. So it's going to be important to understand that mechanoreceptors are what prevent us from lengthening our muscle, or when we feel a stretch, that's going to be our mechanoreceptors telling us, hey, your muscle is going beyond its normal or its regular range of motion. So the first mechanoreceptor that we want to go over is going to be called the muscle spindle, or muscle spindles. This is going to be a major sensory organ of the muscle, and it senses a change in length and rate of length change, which is going to be important to note. Muscle spindles are sensitive to change in length of the muscle and rate of length change. So if you extend your arm and try to stretch your bicep right now by maybe pulling it kind of backwards, that stretch that you feel is actually going to be the muscle spindles telling your brain, hey, this is length, or your muscle is lengthening. So any stretch that you feel is going to be the muscle spindles. So when a muscle is lengthened, the spindles are also stretched, and therefore this information is transmitted to the nervous system, exciting the muscle spindle and thus causing the muscle fibers to contract. So this is also a protective mechanoreceptor in the sense that, let's say you stretch a muscle too fast and all of a sudden your muscle tries to contract to prevent it from overstretching. So the muscle spindle is also sensitive to that rate of length change. So if you like get hit and you're hit in football and your arm gets caught and starts to get thrown backwards or something, you contracting your muscles in order to pull that arm away is going to be a protective mechanism provided by our muscle spindles. So clicking over to slide 11, another mechanoreceptor is going to be called the Golgi tendon organ. And the Golgi tendon organ is going to be located in the musculotendinous junction, so where the muscle and tendon meet. And It's sensitive to a change in muscular tension and rate of tension change. So when they talk about tension, we're thinking about like a muscle that when you pick up a weight, you notice that it is harder to keep that joint in, at the same angle. That is sensed by the Golgi tendon organ. And let's say you add weight fast, that rate of tension change is also sensed by that Golgi tendon organ. So what's really good about knowing these mechanoreceptors is that when you stretch, you're going to deactivate or turn off the muscle spindles, but then we're going to turn on the Golgi tendon organ. So to read the last bullet point on slide 11, using a foam roll for proper stimulation of the GTO or Golgi tendon organ is termed autogenic inhibition and can cause relaxation in an overactive muscle. So when you foam roll or you press or like basically like massage or you're going to press to try to roll out a knot in a muscle, you're going to do what's called autogenic inhibition, in which you stimulate the relaxation of that same muscle by pressing on it. And that is an important point to know for the test, that the Golgi tendon organ or foam rolling is going to be termed autogenic inhibition. So moving over to slide 12, the scientific rationale for stretching is going to be, we're going to talk about first pattern overload. So what we're doing right now, you're looking at this computer and you might be like kind of hunched over and your head's a little bit forward. If you do this 24 hours a day or, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day like a normal job, it's going to create pattern overload in which you're more or less going to be forced into that position when you aren't in this same scenario. So it's going to force you to be a little bit rounded with a little bit head forward. So once again, sit up straight. And other ways that you can have pattern overload would be to repeat the same pattern of motion, like training the same way. People that commonly work out chest muscles or beach muscles, I call them, which is biceps and chest, biceps, triceps, chest. They're going to potentially have that sort of rounded appearance by overtraining the chest, which pulls them forward. Also, a repetitive movement at work, like working overhead as an electrician, could potentially stress your rotator cuff and put your shoulder at a slightly or at risk for injury. Or just having a sedentary lifestyle, sitting down for long periods of time shortens the hip flexors and presents a pattern overload. So, looking at slide 13, here's the way that we know how to fix a cumulative injury cycle, or someone that is going to continuously get injured every, you know, 2 to 3 months from working out, or someone that just seems to have low back pain that's reoccurring. So here's what happens. If you start at the left-hand side under tissue trauma and follow the arrows, we have tissue trauma followed by inflammation, a muscle spasm, then we have an adhesion, which alters neuromuscular control and causes a muscle imbalance. And that muscle imbalance then causes more tissue trauma. So once again, tissue trauma is going to be any sort of injury to a muscle, whether it be from working out too hard or getting kicked in a muscle or pulling a muscle. That's tissue trauma, which causes inflammation. When you have inflammation, the muscle wants to kind of shorten and kind of bunch up, and that's what's called a muscle spasm. And from the muscle spasm, when that muscle spasm heals, it's going to heal in what's called an adhesion or a knot in the muscle, and that's going to shorten the muscle and alter neuromuscular control, and it's going to cause a muscle imbalance. So one example of this could be like wearing high heels as a female. By walking on your toes all the time, it's going to create a little bit of tissue trauma from walking in a plantar flex position, potentially causing a sore calf, which causes inflammation. The muscle tends to spasm, a knot is formed, which alters neuromuscular control, and decreases the amount that you can dorsiflex or lift your toe forward. And so you may be asking, so how do we prevent this cumulative injury cycle from occurring? So for instance, all of your clients with or yourselves with low back pain, I'm sure it only flares up maybe every two to three weeks, once a month, maybe once every 2 months. Here's how you get out of the cumulative injury cycle. So you're going to have your tissue trauma. Let's say you have back pain now. It's causing inflammation, which is the pain, which the muscle spasms, and then it forms this adhesion. Okay, well, the only way really to get out of this cycle is to decrease the amount of adhesions. And when you foam roll and stretch, you're going to decrease the amount of adhesions, therefore restoring neuromuscular control, decreasing the number of muscle imbalances, or decreasing the muscle imbalance, which decreases tissue trauma, decreases the pain or the inflammation, and then decreases the shortening of the muscle in the muscle spasm. So if you need to listen to that again, go ahead and go back, but it's really important to understand that you want to decrease the number of adhesions by foam rolling and stretching. And that's also going to restore proper movement patterns and proper posture. So, moving over to slide 14, we're going to have a flexibility continuum. It is going to be important to understand the differences in the types of flexibility training. And just to read it, flexibility should be followed or should follow a systematic progression. So corrective flexibility is the main one that most of your clients are going to be in because they're trying to improve muscle imbalances and improve proper movement or joint movement, which is called arthrokinematics. So second, we have active flexibility. When your clients start to improve flexibility and they aren't really limited in their ranges of motion, that's when you can move into more of an active flexibility scenario. And to read the active flexibility bullet points, it's designed to improve the extensibility of soft tissue and increase neuromuscular efficiency. But this is going to be a quicker way of doing so. As opposed to holding in corrective flexibility, you'll hold a stretch for about 30 seconds or more. Active flexibility, you're taking a muscle through its range of motion and holding for about 2 to 5 seconds maybe. And specifically with active flexibility, it's important to know that it uses reciprocal inhibition. And reciprocal inhibition is going to be contracting your quadricep to stretch your hamstring. Okay, so it's going to be contracting an antagonistic muscle to stretch the agonist muscle. So if you were to back up from away from your desk and extend your knee right now, and you extend your knee and all of a sudden you start to feel a little bit of a stretch in your hamstring muscle, that's going to be what's called reciprocal inhibition and active flexibility. So if you want to do a few sets of that, contract your quadricep and then that will stretch your hamstring. Hold it for 2 to 5 seconds, do maybe 4 to 5 sets, maybe 5 to 10 sets, and that will lengthen your hamstring rather in a functional sort of way, what you can use before you do any activity. So also we have functional flexibility, which is the final piece of the continuum. And this is going to be integrated multiplanar soft tissue extensibility with optimum neuromuscular control through a full range of motion. So functional flexibility is basically going to be just taking your body through full range of motion movements that are almost basically considered an exercise as opposed to really stretching. So like going a full range of motion squat or a lunge with a rotation, that's going to be your functional flexibility. So let's move over to slide 15. And it's going to give you the pieces of each portion of the flexibility continuum. So you have corrective flexibility, which is made up of self-myofascial release, which is foam rolling. And to note for the test, corrective flexibility is also made up of static stretching, which you're going to hold a stretch for 30 seconds or so to a minute. And active flexibility is going to be self-myofascial release or foam rolling with active isolated stretching. And then functional flexibility is going to be self-myofascial release and dynamic stretching, which is that full range of motion movement. So moving over to slide 16, stretching still continued. Self-myofascial release is going to be focused on the fascial system of the body, so more the connective tissue. And when you apply pressure, it's going to assist in the releasing of knots by stimulating the Golgi tendon organ. Once again, this is autogenic inhibition, which we starred earlier on in the lecture and is going to be important to know for the test. And once again, autogenic inhibition is pressing on a specific muscle to inhibit that muscle or lengthen that muscle, stretch that muscle. And this is suggested before a static stretch for proper or for postural distortion patterns. So when you have or when you want to foam roll before you foam roll and stretch before you work out in order to lengthen muscles that might be overactive and causing improper posture. You could also use it as in a warm-up or in a cool-down. So looking at slide 17, to go over static stretching is passively taking a muscle to a point of tension or feeling that stretch and holding that for a total of about 30 seconds or a little bit more. And this is going to stimulate the Golgi tendon organ and produce an inhibitory effect on the muscle spindle. Once again, this is also autogenic inhibition. You're stretching that muscle to inhibit the muscle spindle, or which is called autogenic inhibition. All right, moving over to slide 18. Active isolated stretching is once again using the agonists and synergists to dynamically move the joint into a into a range of motion. So contract that quadricep and extend the knee, and you'll feel a stretch in the hamstrings. That's going to be active isolated stretching. This is reciprocal inhibition. What does reciprocal mean? Reciprocal means opposite inhibition. And reciprocal meaning, or opposite meaning, the quadricep is opposite to the hamstring. And when you contract that quadricep, it's going to stretch the hamstrings. And just like when you pull your leg back in a quadricep stretch, you can contract your hamstring to stretch your quadricep. So this allows for greater ranges of motion to be accessed. And typically the way you're going to do it is do about 5 to 10 repetitions of about a 2-second hold, contracting that muscle to stretch the opposite muscle. So looking at slide 19, dynamic stretching, once again, just taking your body through a full range of motion in an exercise. So once again, that lunge to reach, or that lunge to rotation, or a full range of motion squat, or even like opening and closing your chest, that's going to be dynamic stretching. And dynamic stretching can be used when there's no muscle imbalances present, meaning they have a great range of motion, maybe almost in an athlete. And this is how you might see some athletes warming up, like the sprinters before the Olympics are doing like dynamic movements or moving in order to stretch specific joints, like some high kicks or butt kicks or distance jumps, that sort of thing. And this can be a good warm-up if you don't have enough, if you don't have any postural distortions. And also it can be a good warm-up if you don't have enough time to do much static stretching. All right, so moving on to the final slide, just to kind of summarize everything. Proper flexibility is the first step in addressing muscle imbalances and movement impairments. First-time clients or your beginning clients will use corrective flexibility as their warm-up and as their cool-down. And active and functional flexibility can be implemented in the strength and power levels of the OPT model or when there's not many muscle imbalances present. Once again, to fix muscle imbalances, use that static stretching to warm up before an activity and increase range of motion short term. You can use active and functional flexibility. All right, guys, hope you enjoyed that lecture. Go ahead and move on down to the audiobook lecture and continue on to do the assignment and quiz for this chapter. And I look forward to seeing you further on.